So today our topic is chaotic behavior. And in a way, I always have to smile when I'm coming to this topic because everybody knows chaos from everyday life. And sometimes we are thinking that chaos is taking us all over. But of course, that's kind of a very important thing to consider in all of our modeling. If things we want to model really behave in a way that the model can predict things, under the assumptions that we can't always be precise, so we will always have small perturbations, small errors in everything we are doing, so starting from measuring the parameters and then calculating with our models. The model should be built in a way that errors don't destroy the results. In a way, our brain is made in a way that we, I was referring to that already before, that we standardly assume everything is in a linear dependence. So if we do something, we will get something as a result, which is kind of proportional to that. And we already learned that that's not always true, that sometimes the behavior is what I always call non-linear, so at least quadratic, exponential, or whatever. But if we are changing over to chaotic behavior, what we are trying to do is still a bit more terrible than just being nonlinear. So maybe we start with a definition. The definition for chaotic for this lecture shall be that a system is considered to be chaotic if small perturbations lead to big changes. So that's not very precise, but that's kind of the spirit of everything which is considered chaotic. So if you retell this in your head, so if we have small errors, small perturbations to the system, this means that the outcome is changed in a drastic way, which means as a result that with any model which we would build, we cannot have any valid prediction. And this is even if we, you know, you always think that you can't really have a valid predictions when something is not deterministic, but this is even deterministic and we can't have a valid prediction. So of course you could say, okay, we are mathematicians, we are taking into account all kinds of strange things, so why not define chaotic and think how far this will carry us in our head, but this is not related to anything which we really observe. Unfortunately, that's not true at all. And if you are thinking back to the first lectures which we had this year, the second lecture was on Julia sets. And there you already got an idea what chaotic behavior looks like. And today I want to refer to an even, I would say simpler in the way that I'm just sticking to one type of iterations in order to have a closer look. What's happening and why it's really necessary to find ways to treat chaotic behavior. If we have an iterative process, this means that we have a function which is applied to the result of itself. So the next step is always found as the result of applying to the function to the step which was before that. Then we usually ask for fixed points of this iteration, because this is kind of a thing where we think the system goes to. And then we have two possibilities. After finding fixed points, we find out they are stable, which means we have a chance really to observe them in real life, or they are not stable. And there are different types of being not stable. And if a fixed point is stable, then it would be nice to see that it's not only stable, but even attractive, which means wherever you start your iterative process, giving enough time or enough iteration steps, we will always end up in the fixed point which has this property to be attractive. There is one kind of easy way to find out if a fixed point is attractive or repulsive, which means it pushes away, which means it's not stable at all, if the function which we want to apply has a derivative. Because what we can do, we can calculate the derivative, then have a look at the absolute value of the derivative, And if this absolute value is less than one, then we can prove that this is an attractive fixed point. So we have to introduce, of course, our fixed point into this derivative. And if we put a fixed point value into the derivative and have a look at the absolute value and this is larger than one, then we know for sure that it's repulsive. So just repeating, if I calculate the derivative, put in the fixed point I want to consider, and take the absolute value, if this is smaller than one, then this fixed point is attractive. If it's bigger than one, then it's repulsive. And if it's equal to one, we don't know what's happening. That's kind of as you learn for power series, that we only can find results for less than one or bigger than one, and for equal to one, you have to have a look for each special case. I want to use this to consider the so-called logistic map. For the logistic map, the function which we want to apply and apply and apply in an iterative way is a quadratic function. In this quadratic function, there is one parameter, which in our script has the name r. And the function reads, r is multiplied with x, and the result of that is multiplied with 1 minus x. For each logistic map, of course, this parameter r is fixed, and we want to find out the properties of the logistic map for this fixed parameter r. We will consider values, starting values between 0 and 1. And when we want to reapply our function, of course, we have to make sure that the result of our function falls in the same interval from which we picked the value at the very beginning in order to be able to reapply our function. And having a look at our function rx multiplied with 1 minus x, we see that whenever we choose our parameter r between 0 and 4, then the result of this function falls between 0 and 1. So we will stick to this parameter set between 0 and 4 for our fixed parameter r. It's easy to find the two fixed points of this quadratic formula. One is kind of obvious, it's x equal to 0, and the other one is the other point where we can solve x is equal to rx multiplied with 1 minus x. And that's the point where 1 over r is multiplied with r minus 1. So the second fixed point is a different one for each parameter r. With these two fixed points, we can make our considerations if they are attractive or repulsive by calculating the derivative. So calculating the derivative of a quadratic function can be done almost sleeping. The result here is r minus 2r multiplied with x. And so if we introduce our first fixed point, which is x equal to 0, we get as a result minus r. So if we take the absolute value, we have that the derivative of our function at x equal to 0, absolute value, is equal to the absolute value of r. So whenever we choose a parameter r which is less than 1, we will have an attractive fixed point in x equal to 0. And if we choose our parameter r to be larger than 1, then this fixed point x equal to 0 will be repulsive. Well, that was easy, wasn't it? So now we can introduce the second fixed point. The fixed point 1 over r multiplied with r minus 1 into our derivative, and the result of that is 2 minus r, which means if we consider the absolute value of that we have three regions. The region that the value of 2 minus r is larger than 1 is realized for r between 0 and 1. Of course, the 0 can be taken on, so we have 0 is smaller or equal to r, but r has to be strictly smaller than 1. And the second possibility to have that bigger than 1 is to have are between, so on the other side of 3. So the relation would be 3 is less than r. And since we wanted to stick between r between 0 and 4, we will have the relation 3 is less than r is less than 4. Then we have one interval where this second fixed point is attractive, and the result of the absolute value of 2 minus r is less than 1. And that's precisely the case for 1 is less than r is less than or equal to 3. So just to formulate that in a different way, for our parameter r to be equal to 1, there is a bifurcation in our set of solutions or in the consideration of the fixed points. If r is less than 1, then the first fixed point, which is x is equal to 0, is stable, and the other one is not stable because it's repulsive. And between 1 and 3 for our parameter r, the second one is stable and the first one is repulsive. Now, of course, you could say this is kind of boring. And the interesting case is what's happening if r is greater than 3. Because then no one of both of our values is stable one. And this is promising a little bit of fun to choose our parameter between 3 and 4. Because we can still reapply our function. Because we always land between 0 and 1. And can reapply and reapply and see what's happening. And of course, it's not so much fun to do that by hands, but you can go to the Wolfram site, which I will link together with this audio file, and can play around with their CDF player, which has the logistic map already implemented. The only thing which you have to take into account that our parameter r in this player is called mu. So what you can do, just to be sure, we can choose mu between 0 and 1. And then you can choose any initial value as being x0 between 0 and 1 and see what is the result of the logistic map acting. And you immediately see that there is kind of a staircase which always goes down to this point which we know to be stable, which is x equal to 0. And you really get a picture of why that's happening while having a look at what the CDF player is doing, because you just jump from this function, which is the quadratic function of our logistic map, and then you jump to the function, which is the linear function x equal to y, and that's what the map is doing, just going this stepwise function down to x equal to 0. Then, just to be sure, we can choose mu between 1 and 3, so something near 2, for example. And then you see that the second fixed point is really moving from the left to the right. It gets larger and larger. And you see how the function is nearing itself into the stable point on the right-hand side, which is kind of in a spiral way, with a spiral which has corners. So this consideration seems to be true, which we made about the second point, the second fixed point. And now, of course, you can try what's happening if we choose a parameter which is larger than 3. So we near 3. And even if you go near to 3, from below 3, where you know that this is a stable point, you already see that's kind of funny what's happening, how the spiral gets denser and denser near this point 3, and not just some few steps which already lead to this stable point. And then when we cross 3, we see that a lot of interesting things are happening. So we have kind of a cycle going around, so no stable point at all, because at a certain point our spiral enters into a spiral where it's caught, just going along a spiral all the time, and not finishing in one point, but just going along this spiral all the time. And if you choose the parameter even bigger, then you see that it's not just one spiral, but there are two spirals. And if you make it even larger, then you can have a lot of spirals where between which this logistic map is sending the values. So just go along one spiral, and then it jumps to the next one, and it's almost caught there, then it jumps to the next one. And you have kind of a traveling path, which looks nice, but you can never say that there is some kind of asymptotic situation where you end up like being in a fixed point or in a cycle for your logistic map. The question, of course, is, are there mathematical concepts which can work with the fact that you don't really, so that you know that you don't know anything, so to say? And one possibility to do that is the concept of strange attractors. So maybe we should first define what's an attractor. An attractor is a set with three properties. Firstly, if we apply our map, so for example, the logistic map or any other map, then it's an attractor to this map. If under this map, it maps into itself. So like in the logistic map, for example, we always had values which were between 0 and 1. So the logistic map for the parameters between 1 and 4 always mapped into this interval between 0 and 1. So this was kind of a mapping into itself, as an easy example. The second property of an attractor is that there should exist a neighborhood such that if the time goes to infinity for our process, or the iterative process goes to infinity, then this neighborhood is mapped to the thing which we want to call attractor, so our set. And the third property is that there is no smaller set with this property. So this is the smallest neighborhood such that it is mapped to the attractor. And of course, you see why we call it attractor, because whenever we start near it, the result will be that, giving enough time for the process to develop, we will end up on the thing which we call attractor, so it attracts all the values. Two simple examples of attractors, of course, are fixed points. They are kind of a very simple attractor. And the other example is a cycle. So if we are kind of in a cycling, in a periodic process, just repeating things, repeating and repeating, then this is also an attractor. So of course, attractors are always interesting topics whenever we want to study the asymptotic behavior for processes. And starting to have a look at chaotic behavior, we are mostly interested in attractors which have a strange property and are therefore called strange attractors. And the strange property is that if we have two points which are near to each other, so in mathematical terms we would say the distance is less than epsilon, then through the reapplication of our mapping, they will become infinitely far away from each other. So it's an attractor where we know that a neighborhood property is always lost. So in a dramatic way, because we say that the distance between two points which lie as near to each other as we like becomes infinitely large anyway. And you, of course, immediately see that this is intimately connected to the fact of this chaotic behavior. So now you could say it would be nice to see an example of that. And in order to construct an example, let's go back to the Cantor set. The Cantor set is the result of an iterative process where we take away, the interval from 0 to 1 with ending points. Then we divide this into 3 parts of the same length and we take away the middle of that. And so we end up with an interval from 0 to 1 over 3, including the endpoints, and the interval 2 over 3 to 1, also with the endpoints. Now we take away the middle third of these 2 intervals and always leave the endpoints in the process. And we end up with 4 intervals, 0 to 1 over 9, and so on. And we repeat this process until infinity and get the Cantor set. The interesting thing, which we always prove in analysis 1, is that this is a set which only consists of points, so there is no interval at all in that. And of course, that's why you would think that if there are only points and we measure in a measure which is kind of a length measure, so one-dimensional length measure, the result of this length should be 0. But we can prove that this is not the case. Depending on the measure, we can even prove that is the Cantor set is as big as the length of the interval from 0 to 1, for example. But here we want to take a different kind of dimension where we are measuring the logarithm of the numbers of copies of our construction process divided by the logarithm of the downsizing factor, which means we have to have the 2 copies, the logarithm of 2 over the downsizing factor, which is 3. So we have to consider this over logarithm of 3. And the result of logarithm 2 over logarithm 3 is approximately 0.631. So this is kind of a lot. If you consider you have the feeling that dimensions should be 0, this is more near to 1 than to 0. And it's really interesting to have a different measure for these kinds of sets. And to know what you can really measure with that. But of course, that's not our topic here. Our topic was to construct an example where we have a strange attractor. And for that, we consider a two-dimensional iteration. So we have a vector, xn plus 1 over and yn plus 1. And we calculate the next xn, as we calculate xn plus 1 and yn plus 1 from xn and yn. In the following way, whenever yn is between 0 and 1 over 2, we just take 1/3 of the x component and double the y component. And when yn is between 1/2 and 1, then we shift the result, which we get in the first case, in the way that it fits in this in the thing which has the length 1 in both dimensions. So if you write this in a formula, this means if yn is between 1/2 and 1, the result for the x component is 1 over 3 xn plus 2/3. And for the yn component, we have 2yn minus 1. So the result of this two-dimensional iteration is, so to say, we take the elements of the Cantor set, and at each point of the Cantor set, we get a line in the second dimension. So you could call them Cantor lines, yeah, because at each point which belongs to the Cantor set, you just draw a line of the length 1. Of course, this is an attractor to our iteration, but it's a strange attractor. Because you can convince yourself that points which are near to each other at the very beginning, at a certain point, they will jump by our function to a part which is kind of disconnected from the other parts. So however you measure distance, they get kind of an infinitely long distance to each other because they belong to different components of our attractor. So you see, our example for the strange attractor might not be that simple as the example which we had for the chaotic behavior with the logistic map, but nevertheless it's still kind of simple because we only divide into three and kind of stick everything together in a way that we have this mapping into itself restored. The thing is, of course, that we have to keep in mind that this chaotic behavior is possible, and it's always an extra condition to ask that a problem kind of continuously depends on its initial condition and doesn't have this bad behavior. But on the other hand, I think at least it's also a lot of fun to play around with this logistic map and try to find some structure in this chaotic behavior. And mathematicians did this with a lot of enthusiasm. And I could still invite you to at least play and get an idea what's happening there. Thank you for your attention.